Chapter 16. Without the steadying influence of the kindly Halicon sage, Pricecheck was becoming more and more confused. After approximately 300 phone calls, none of which connected him with a living person, he began to develop an idée fixe, an obsessive idea that lodged in his mind. Had he thought to search the phone number on the internet, he might have saved himself a lot of trouble. But somehow, the thought never occurred to him. If he could not find Halicon Sage, and it began to look as if he couldn't, perhaps he needed to find this Jenny. Logically, one could not dial 300 essentially random numbers without ever reaching a human being, but that was just what was happening. They were all recordings, voicemails, machines, and none of them ever said, "I'll get back to you." How unlikely was that? By the ordinary laws of probability, practically impossible. Pricecheck did not have Halicon Sage's horror of machines and bureaucracy. He had grown up in the shadow of a post-Soviet police state. To him, the fact that Jenny was so well guarded meant she was important. Perhaps if he could find her, she would help him. Certainly somebody needed to help him. The weight of the cigar box and the whistle, what was in them and what they signified, had become too great. The cigar box was too heavy for his heart to carry. His heart, so long denied in the shadow of his mad but brilliant brain. Putting the phone down, he stretched his aching back and arms and stepped into the hall, taking in the cabbage and curry smells of his rooming house. It was 1 a.m., and the silence was palpable. He went back to bed. Nothing had changed out there or in his room. But something had changed in Pricecheck. Perhaps the frozen fish in his soul had begun to thaw. Perhaps he could find Jenny. And perhaps she would be kind.
"Where are you, Jenny?"
he called into the darkened rooming house.
"Shut up, you moron,"
came the dependable reply from one of his fellow roomers. Turning on his side and favoring his telephone arm, Pricecheck sighed and went to sleep. Someone else besides Pricecheck had begun to thaw, had begun to experience a fundamental change within. The much-tested Muhammad Abdurrahim Hussein had reached the end of his rope. He had accepted the challenges of the West, of modernity and materialism. He had believed that if he put all the old things behind him, the warrens of red and sand-colored houses, the desert stars, beautiful enough to break your heart but leading nowhere, that he could succeed. He had channeled everything into his studies, his career. And now look at him. He had nothing. And he had not been a failure. That was the horror of it. He had been a great success. But because of his name, appearance, and heredity, none of this had mattered. He had been a co-worker and neighbor to many, though too busy to make friends. But where were they now? In all the surrounding McMansions with their obsessively green lawns, had there been one human being to step forward on his behalf? To say, "This is a good man, a good citizen. He mows his lawn, pays his taxes, works hard. He bothers nobody." There had been no one. Like others before him, Abdurrahim was discovering the cold, poisoned heart of materialism, the shallow emptiness of its promise for which the poor, the desperate, and the wrongly guided give their families and their souls. He realized all of this, and all he could do was weep. When Layla returned from her fruitless library searches, leading little Nuri by the hand, he was still sitting on the same curb, leaning on the cat carrier in a puddle of tears. Layla had no idea how to deal with her husband, who had gone from driven careerist to heartbroken failure with no intervening stages other than his increasing desperation. They couldn't go on sitting there forever. Little Nuri was patient, but the child was only 5, and the poor cat was meowing pitifully.
"Dude, it can't be that bad," came a voice.
Not a voice, but a human voice anyway. That was something, thought Layla. So what was this stranger? Looking up, she saw a smallish, scruffy man, bearded and long-haired. His eyes and furrowed brow looked concerned, for herself apparently, and for her husband and the child. Behind him, like a friendly djinn, stood a tall, thin black man. He smiled, flashing a gold tooth. Nuri seemed enchanted with him, ignoring the small man and staring at the golden smile. Abdur-Rahim sat unresponsive.
Dude, have you eaten?
Asked the small man. Abdur-Rahim thought about it. No, they had not. Nuri must be starving.
What do you suggest?
He responded in a tired voice. These were some sort of street people or hippies or people on welfare. Once he would have scorned them, had no time for them. But now, they were all he had. His proud neighbors had ignored him in his time of need.
Like that Good Samaritan thing the Christians have, he thought.
We going to the Dirty Dog,
said the black man decisively, giving Nuri a hand up off the curb.
I know it sound bad to you, but it be a warm place.
Price Check had taken to stopping random strangers on the street and asking them where Jenny was. If they asked, Jenny who? He just looked blank. Though his fundamental being had experienced a seismic shift, he was outwardly desperate and approaching the near catatonic state in which Halicon Sage had first found him. One of his aunts had told him of the great rabbis of Eastern Europe, the Hasidim, who taught that asking a stranger could sometimes provide information, holy guidance. Or perhaps they didn't, maybe he had heard this somewhere else. But he was beyond reason now, and almost beyond hope, so any course would do. Down the street came a small woman, all shawls and colors, fringes and blowing hair.
Have you seen Jenny? He asked her.
Huge, mournful brown eyes looked into his, studying him carefully.
You believe you have no friends except the one who can't be found. But this is not true. Though they do not understand you, those others are your friends. They mean you well.
Price Check knew exactly what she was talking about. Returning home, he showered, shaved, put on his best clothes, and headed for the Dirty Dog. The Iraqi family found it a little odd that the two hippies were driving a limousine. The tall black man had introduced himself as Ratbone, for which both adults had blamed their faulty English. This could not possibly be anyone's name. They could make nothing of the ranting little man in the back seat, who kept demanding oysters and caviar. Like the other grown-ups in the car, they ignored him. But Nuri, seated quietly in back like the good child he was, began repeating softly after a while,
I'm Basil Vasselschnazer. I'm Basil Vasselschnazer.
It was the best English word he had ever heard. When they got to the Dirty Dog, a surprise was waiting. Price Check was back, all dressed up like Christmas. But nothing could be done about him now. There was a family to feed and care for.
Hey, Bill, called Wolf to the bartender. Haul out some of those pickled eggs, will you? And some peanuts. What else you got?
I got some pork rinds, offered Bill helpfully.
That ain't right, said Ratbone. You don't want no pork rinds, do you?
Abdur-Rahim shuddered. He was sitting in the Dirty Dog and he was being offered pork rinds.
It figured. They don't eat no pork, said Ratbone to the bartender.
Got it, said Bill. How about a ham sandwich?
They don't eat that neither, said Ratbone.
But the cat might like some.
Got in at buffalo wings?
Abdur-Rahim was pretty sure that buffaloes were like cows. They did not have wings. But at least it wasn't pig meat. He nodded an okay. Layla, deep in a dua prayer of thankfulness, saw the symbolism differently from her depressed husband. Like blessed Yusuf, Mariam, and baby Isa, peace be upon them, her beleaguered family had found shelter in a stable. Well, in a bar, actually, but this was no time to be picky. Little Nuri would sleep warm with a full stomach. It turned out that the back room had a couple of cots in it, and the exhausted family was led there after they had eaten.
What about me? Grumbled Buzzard. Where am I going to sleep?
Whined Snake Eyes. He was seconded by various other members of the Dirty Dog gang.
On the floor, or the bar, said Bill unsympathetically. Or go home to your mudus.
This made the dog boys sad. It was possible that, like Peter Pan's accomplices, they had no mothers. Children make odd combinations of the words they hear from others.
Nuri drifted off to sleep, mumbling,
Alhamdulillah, I'm Basil Vassarschnauzer. Alhamdulillah, I'm Basil Vassarschnauzer.
To him, these long and fragrant phrases seemed not unalike. After the little family was put to bed, there were several other matters to be ironed out. One was the presence of Ratbone, de facto head of the Fifth Street Mofos, which was unusual. Not unprecedented, but unusual. There had been gang summits and other negotiations in the Dirty Dog before. Despite its unappealing name, it had a certain ambiance. And though both groups studiously ignored the fact, their infrequent gatherings were becoming less like meetings between mortal enemies and more like family reunions. Still, for Ratbone to be here alone, for all the world like another taller, dirty dog, was unusual and broke with precedent.
It's okay, he's with me, said Wolf to some skeptical grumbling. He's our computer expert, he tried next. Come on, guys, he's helping me find Ruby.
And his fool Halligan Sage, too, chimed in Ratbone.
The group unbent a little. If it was for Ruby. The next thing on the agenda was the reappearance of Pricecheck, who seemed a bit crestfallen at his distracted reception.
Hey, sorry to ignore you, dude, said Buzzard in a friendly way. We've had a lot on our minds these last couple hours. What you been doing, man?
Skull and Snake Eyes gathered round, clapping his back in a friendly way. Beaner was over by the bar, also watching. But Ruby was nowhere to be seen. Pricecheck began to feel better.
I've invented something, he said, holding up the cigar box. Something new.
He had their full attention. Suddenly, he wondered how much he should tell them, but with so many eyes on him, it seemed wrong to clam up now.
And I have another new name, he added, hoping to distract them.
He did, in fact, have a new name. He had invented it after watching a lot of 40s movies and reading a bunch of early noir novels. The name was composed of two words by which the male characters addressed each other constantly. In almost 3 weeks, it had only gotten him a few odd looks, and no laughter, which was always a plus. He stuck out his hand, determined to play out his introduction scene correctly at last.
The name's Mac, he said. Buddy Mac.
Buddy Mac was not too bad, considering. The dirty dogs, one by one, shook his hand. They really did feel a sneaking affection for Pricecheck, and they felt a little guilty for letting him hang around unacknowledged while they got the family settled.
Better than Flintstone Ex-Lax like before, said Skull. You're learning. You'll be a real American one of these days.
So, what you got in the box, Mac? Since you're one of us now?
Asked Beaner, walking over with his drink. He ignored the annoying real American comment, reflecting that these ignorant Norte Americanos had no idea that Canadians, Mexicans, and people a long way south of that were real Americans too, on account of the whole deal was called the Americas. But after 15 years, he had given up trying to make this point.
What you got in a box? He repeated.
Nanobots,
Pricecheck blurted. There was silence. Nobody had any idea what he was talking about. Ruby said things like this at times, probably trying to prove how intelligent she was, and it was best to just ignore it. The college-educated should never be encouraged in their snobbery.
Nanobots,
said Pricecheck more loudly, wondering if somehow they had not heard him.
I knew a Nan Abbott once, said Snake Eyes thoughtfully. She pronounced it different, though.
The conversation was at an impasse. Pricecheck thought a bit more information might break through the inexplicable wall of incomprehension now separating him from his friends.
Robots. You can't see them. They're invisible because very small, you see. Very, very small. That what means nano.
His English was deserting him again, slipping away as it always did when he was under stress. To be almost accepted, then to fall back again into strangerhood, this would be unbearable.
And bots for robots. Little tiny robots, too small to see, red and silver, he added proudly. I get color idea from kid game I find online. Red and silver.
Like Josh and Trevor, after conceiving their own Lazlex site, he had checked to make sure he was the first. Though he wasn't, He had seen no conflict. Still, he had been intrigued enough to look around and had been charmed by the red and silver of the tiny robots in the Lazlex game. It had inspired him to hastily alter the molecular makeup of his nanobots to replicate those colors. This took him barely half an hour. Such was his genius. He had also appropriated the idea of starting with nuclear plants and weapons. The nanobots would begin by dismantling the most deadly inventions, working their way down to relatively harmless things like cars and computers. If at some point he wanted to stop them, he had only to blow his silent whistle. The whistle was always round his neck, and the nanobots were safe in their unassailable box of strange new metal. So, all was well. Coming out of his momentary reverie, Pricecheck found everyone staring at him.
"But all okay, though. Nothing to worry about," he persisted, wondering if it was the awe and wonder of the nanobots that held them speechless. "See? I have whistle."
He lifted the whistle from around his neck, showing them all was well.
"So, no problem, no danger. I want them, I call them. With whistle, they obey me, so it's no problem."
Still nothing. He was beginning to feel a little desperate.
"And they make more of them," he added obscurely, trying one last time. "Metal, plastic, leaves, paper, is matter. They can make more. Any material, forever, never stop."
The pained silence continued. Giving up explaining as a bad job, he did something he believed would always work in any country.
"Drinks?"
he asked. And everyone forgot the nanobots.